welcome to Something's Off with Andrew Heaton. I'm your host, Andrew Heaton, and I wish I were as confident and well-rested as you are. I don't know what kind of supplements you're on, but I want them. I hope you had a good weekend. And the program you're listening to is brought to you by Meat Bullets, the quickest, deadliest way to deliver meat in a straight line, period. Whether you want to get delicious chunks of beef across a river, to the other end of a golf course, or to stop a home intruder if he's vegan, meat bullets are an essential part of any home arsenal. And they come in a variety of delicious flavor calibers. Mesquite 22, 19mm Parabellum Chipotle, 30 caliber carbine Sriracha, garlic buckshot, and my favorite, Hollow Point Teriyaki. Yes, if you've ever thought, I want to fire a sniper rifle, but also, I have the munchies. How can I quickly reconcile these two distinct impulses? Well, you're in luck. Meat Bullets has you covered. Folks, I don't really know how to cook, but I do know one thing. Everyone loves a turducken. So whenever I'm invited to a potluck over at my friend Derek's house, I squeeze a couple of rounds of .308 caliber habanero meat bullets into a pot roast and know I'm going to be the belle of the ball. Meat Bullets from Delicious Munitions. Ready, aim, snack. And before we bring on my guest today, it's time for another installment of How To with Heaton. Today, how to be a good house guest when you're living as a political prisoner in an embassy. First, try to learn everybody's name who works at the Ecuadorian embassy. They might be staff, but until you find another place offering political asylum, they're also your roommates. For that reason, you probably shouldn't walk around in your underwear all the time. It's fine if the staff does it too, but if they're wearing business casual, you should at least put on pajamas. Ask yourself, if I were at work right now, would I appreciate someone skateboarding past me and the ambassador? Should I skateboard inside of an embassy at all? Granted, you may not be able to skateboard right now, but you have to balance your desire to go skateboarding against the possibility of so irritating your hosts that they kick you out. Let's talk about music. A good rule of thumb is, don't play loud music during business hours, 9 to 5, but also keep it down after 10 o'clock. That way you don't disturb any other asylum seekers who might live there. But by that same token, if other political asylum seekers are playing loud music at midnight, even on weekends, you should feel comfortable confronting them. And if it's a repeat offense, speaking to the ambassador about their behavior. Talk to the ambassador about the embassy's pet policy. Do they allow pets? This is worth considering before bringing your cat. But if you already have the cat, be sure to clean up after it. Don't assume it's the staff's job to pick up cat poop. Also, it is most definitely not the staff's job to feed your cat. It's your cat. In general, it's a bad idea to hack the president of Ecuador and then anonymously dump information about him implying a corrupt administration because you're angry he changed the Wi-Fi password and won't give it to you. That may feel good in the short term, but in the long term, it's probably going to make the president of Ecuador tetchy. Be sure not to sexually assault any Swedish people, or really any people in general. Just avoid rape across the board. That could come back to haunt you. Finally, pick up after yourself. It's an embassy, not a hotel. Don't verbally and physically threaten the staff. You wouldn't do that in an embassy suites, so don't do it at the Ecuadorian embassy either. Thank you. Today, we are going to talk about Space Force. But before I bring on my guest, I want to kind of frame where my head's at and give him a little bit of an opportunity to absorb where I'm at. So as you'll recall, Mike Pence announced last year, I believe it was last year, that the Trump administration desires a Space Force, which would protect things like satellites in space, of course, and ensure American supremacy in space as Russia and China start pointing rockets at it. I will bring on the guest momentarily, but like I said, I just want to go ahead and get this out here. I should admit, I am very excited about the prospect of uniforms. They could be outstanding. Plus, if the Space Force became the sixth branch of the military, we could finally get another good John Philip Sousa ditty and just shoehorn the word space into it. I think that can make a pretty kick in March. That would all be exciting. And in terms of big national projects, I am a lot more amenable to doing cool stuff in space than I am spending tax dollars to build a $5 billion speed bump around Mexico to keep brown people from picking fruit for me. To paraphrase my spirit animal, P.J. O'Rourke, Trump's wall proposal is a $5 billion subsidy to Mexican ladder companies. I would just assume toss that money at something that flies and shoots lasers and produces cool uniforms and John Philip Sousa tunes. But even then, noting that, I do have some concerns. I would be amenable to a Space Force if the Department of Defense took the estimated $13 billion to run it out of existing military programs. As of now, our military budget this year is $716 billion. That's the size, about the size of every other military budget on Earth combined. And we're probably not going to fight planet Earth anytime soon. Our defense budget is larger than the next 8 militaries combined, 5 of which are our allies or security partners. Our military budget's about 10 times the size of Russia, our biggest rival, and 4.5 times that of China. So, not to put too much of an emphasis on this, I think we're spending plenty of money on the U.S. military right now, and I would only want to add another branch if it was taking out of the existing budget rather than adding to it. I also suspect that if we did create a 6th branch of government, it would create rather than reduce bureaucracy, which I hate and loathe. In 1944, there were 256 flag officers for about 6,000 ships. Today, there are 360 flag officers thereabouts for 280 ships, so more flag officers for far fewer ships. Now, I can only assume if we created a Space Force, we would have a lot of Commodores, because a Commodore is the coolest rank, in my opinion, but we'd probably be even more top-heavy and bureaucratic than we are now. Finally, I am a big fan of Elon Musk. I am a big fan of what the private space industry is doing, and I'm concerned that if we added the estimated 20,000 positions the Pentagon would use for a Space Force, our brighter engineering minds would join that in order to get those snappy uniforms and cool Commodore rank instead of working for Elon Musk to build us awesome rockets to Mars. So that's where my head's at on Space Force. But I do not know as much as my guest, Anthony Colangelo, who is a podcaster and the host of Main Engine Cutoff and Off Nominal. Anthony, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Andrew. I love that little monologue. You've hit on a lot of stuff that I'm excited to talk about with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That is new today. I don't normally do that. Someone pointed out to me over the weekend that I am so amenable and conflict averse, it's oftentimes difficult to discern what I actually think. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll just go ahead and spell it out at the beginning of the show and then have a nice chat. And then everybody kind of knows where I am and we'll have a good romp through the field and have some good discourse. So I'm glad you liked it. Thank you. So I think you are probably more bullish about Space Force than I am. Tell me why.
Well, let me preface that with saying that I do agree with a lot of what you're saying in the budgetary department. Mm-hmm. But I consider myself a Space Force inevitabilist.
Okay.
I think it's something that will exist.
You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a Space Force inevitabilist. You have another Space Force inevitabilist.
I run into a lot of them out here in Philadelphia.
All right. I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
So the budget thing is interesting to note on, because the idea is not to stand up a Space Force and let everything else run as is. A lot of what they're talking about here with regards to the Space Force is pulling out the space contingents from the other agencies and assembling it into a new military service. The setup would be about a 5-year period as envisioned right now. And at the end of that 5 years, the idea is to have nearly 95% of the budget for Space Force actually extracted from those other services. Now, that's obviously as hopeful as government intentions tend to be, and I think I'm skeptical as you are that there wouldn't be massive growth outside of that. But really, there's a couple of things to take apart when we say the term Space Force. What we mean is three different things, actually, right now.
Okay.
There is the U.S. Space Force, which is the military service, and that is the buzzword you'll hear is the organized, train, and equip functionality. You know, you would enlist for the Space Force, and you would go get trained to be a Space Force person over there. But then there's the U.S. Space Command, which is the combatant command that would direct those forces. And then there's the Space Development Agency. That is the agency that actually exists as of last month, and that would focus on acquiring satellites, launch vehicles, all of the stuff to make the other two successful.
I'm going to pause you for a moment just to make sure I understand this. So the three components of the Space Force as postulated by the Trump administration are the Air Force Space Command, which I think we already have, don't we? Isn't that a part of the Air Force?
Air Force Space Command is different than what U.S. Space Command would be.
Gotcha.
So Space
okay.
Command would be more towards the U.S. Strategic Command or AFRICOM or CENTCOM, all of these different combatant commands that are responsible for using the military services at their disposal to accomplish an objective.
Okay. All right. So it's that is the sort of nexus hub. Would we bring over the? I mean, you'd said a few minutes ago that the goal would be to migrate a lot of the existing staff and other branches to this new branch of the military. Would they convert the Air Force Space Command into this command hub, the U.S. Space Command?
Yes, it's a lot of the stuff that's going to make up the original edition of Space Force would come out of the Air Force, because today about 80% of our space assets, both budget-wise and personnel, exist within the Air Force, and the other 20% is split across the Army, the Navy, and then there's also intelligence agencies as well.
Okay.
So that's another important point, that the intelligence agencies, notably the National Reconnaissance Office and the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, those would not be Space Force, just as NASA and NOAA and the civil agencies. This is really just about taking things from the Air Force, the Navy, and the Army and coalescing them into a Space Force.
Okay. Well, I think I would be okay with reorganization if it in fact streamlined things. My bigger concern is the budget, which we can get to in a minute. But I also want to make sure I fully grasp this, the three-point plan here. So there's the branch itself. There's the command you're talking about, which I assume is a part of that branch, or is, as you know, there's like a joint chief or something that's running that. I don't know how military command operates. And then the third part, the U.S. space development, and that's already existent?
Yeah, the Pentagon stood that up about a month ago, and that is really, I think that's the visible, you know, the tip of the iceberg to an argument that's happening behind closed doors, where there's a large contingent of people that are unhappy with the way that the Air Force and the other services are thinking about space today.
Okay.
And this gets at the nut of why I'm very supportive of Space Force, though I should say, again, another thing to touch on, I'm not supportive of what's currently in the fiscal year 2020 budget request, because I think that's the wrong way to go about it. But the idea is that the leadership of the Air Force, which are in charge of our Space Forces today, they are, you know, the upper echelons of the Air Force are plane people. They've grown out of the plane side of the Air Force, not the space wings, and that makes a lot of sense given their mission. But the head of the Air Force, Heather Wilson, she's the Secretary of the Air Force today. She'll be leaving at the end of May, which read into that what you will. She's been on Capitol Hill a lot recently talking about this issue. And I think every time she appears, this complete lack of understanding of space issues is really apparent. When she starts talking about the way that they're looking at the future of space, it diverges heavily from the people that are really invested in space day to day. And that's kind of the nut of the Space Development Agency. There are people there that see the architectures that the Air Force is going for as out of date and out of touch. They're investing a lot of money in a handful of very expensive satellites rather than building very cheap satellites that are cheaper to launch, cheaper to replace when something goes down, and less prone to enemy attacks. And that's the first thing that the Space Development Agency is going to work on, is this constellation of satellites that are, you know, very cheap, commercial off-the-shelf parts that make up these satellites, rather than five or six multi-billion dollar satellites. And Heather Wilson has been saying, well, I don't see why we shouldn't keep doing it the old way. And these people that are now in the Space Development Agency are saying, because that's not where the puck is going these days.
Yeah, well, yeah, the old way, if we get really far back when involved biplanes, I could see a reason for diverging from what would be the normal Air Force operating procedure. Before we move on, just out of curiosity, though, why would you need a new branch to do that as opposed to just giving a more clear remit or a new leadership to the existing Air Force Space Command?
So this is something that I think actually led to the creation of the Air Force originally. When you give two, you know, competing priorities to a branch of the military, they are always going to favor their home turf, as it were,
okay,
when times get tough, when budgets get tight, when decisions need to be made. So in the last decade or so, budgets have been rising across the board, as you're saying.
Yeah.
But it was very apparent coming out of the, you know, exploding budgets, then the budgets decreased a little bit. And then in the next phase, the phase we're in now, when the Air Force was given a bunch of more money, the plane side of the Air Force had a 50% increase in budget, and the space side was still sinking 17%. So that's indicative of the leadership not being really, you know, they don't care that much about space. And the idea that I was discussing here is that right now the Air Force leader is in charge of space. So any space command or any space, you know, priorities is going to filter up through that head of the Air Force. And the idea that I support is a Space Force that's separate from the Air Force entirely, which is not what's in the budget request right now. It's more akin to the Marine Corps that would report up through the Air Force. So what I would like to see is a Secretary of the Space Force that can actually have a seat at that highest level table of government and say, here are the things that we need, here is why we need it. And then it's up to Congress to decide who's right and who gets the money. And it's not something that the Secretary of the Air Force could put in their back pocket and say, we'll get around to it in 5 years.
Gotcha. Okay. So there's a kind of, there's a sort of advocacy role that needs to be apportioned within the Joint Chiefs rather than a kind of virtual representation of a sub element within the Air Force, that there ought to
precisely,
be someone at the
precisely.
Table. Okay. Why?
And yes, and the Marine Corps, you know, they don't have a Secretary of the Marine Corps, but they do have somebody at those tables because they are seen as an existing branch. But the current fiscal year 2020 budget request includes the Space Force as a section of the Air Force. So there still would not be a highest level Secretary of the Space Force. They would actually report up through the same secretary that reports today, and that's the part that really bums me out.
So my understanding of the military is almost entirely through Star Trek, in terms of ranks and my understanding of org charts and that kind of thing, which deviates from the actual United States military considerably on a lot of things. So just out of curiosity, real quick, to make sure I understand this, are the Marines a completely autonomous branch, or are they like a semi-autonomous branch? I sort of assume they were their own thing, but they are subordinate to the Navy.
They are, yeah, okay. And they're considered a separate branch, but they are subordinate to the Navy, just as in times of war, the Coast Guard would actually fall under the jurisdiction of the Department of the Navy.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. I did not know that. Interesting. Okay. Well,
And there's other, alongside those military services, you know, I mentioned the National Reconnaissance Office, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency. Mm-hmm. Those are actually just part of the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. So they don't fall under any military service. They're just other agencies that are at that top level of the DOD.
Okay. All right. So you described yourself as a Space Force inevitabilist. Why do you think it's inevitable?
Well, I really see space as the future of humanity in a lot of ways. That's why I'm such a nerd like you about all these different things. I've heard you talk about it many times in the show. It's why I do a show every day about this kind of stuff.
Although tip of the hat to you, you clearly have done your research, and like you're spitting off a lot of details that I do not have at my disposal. I'm very impressed. So continue.
I've been listening to a lot of House of Representatives hearings in the last month, and it's been a slog.
My God, I hope you had a good drink with you.
Certainly, at 9 a.m. on Wednesdays. I see it as inevitable because space is becoming more important to everybody's life every single day. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that we do in space that go unnoticed. But with that becomes, you know, there's a lot of people looking to space to deploy massive internet constellations and all sorts of new capabilities. Space tourism is becoming a thing. So mm-hmm. the increase of traffic into space is going to present a need to have some more focus from the military there. And the Air Force has not been capable of keeping up with that. They have not been capable of keeping their eyes on where things are going. And I see some things here that the Space Force could take up that I don't see in the cards for the Air Force today. And I could see the Space Force, you know, the way that the Navy keeps shipping lanes open so that trade can flow across oceans as much as trade can happen outside of trade wars, I could see the Space Force doing that for space as well and making sure that we have debris mitigation.
Pirates
would be a good
Somali
one. Pirates, I was thinking space debris.
Crappy rocket
space
program.
Space pirates are good, too.
Knock our tourism out. Somali pirates. That follows to me. It's interesting that you bring up a kind of private sector role to it as well, because I had sort of assumed that Space Force was the remit would be entirely within the defensive sphere, because we have a number of satellites up there. I think the last stats I saw were we've got something like 160 military satellites, we've a lot of the ground action that we're doing is coordinated from satellites. So in theory, if we were in a ground war in Afghanistan or the Middle East or wherever, if our satellites are knocked out, all of a sudden we're blind. And so I would assume that there is a fairly large military connection with what Space Force would be handling, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the things is what is included in Space Force and what is not. And that's the stuff that Congress is still arguing about today. I think 5 or 10 years into the future, something like the National Reconnaissance Office would be rolled into the Space Force. Those are the people that take satellite imagery of battlefields. The Army has been working a lot on these kind of programs where they could say, hey, we're going to be driving into this town. We'd like a satellite image today. So we know, are there new buildings? Is there road here still? You know, does that bridge exist still? It's really kind of amazing. They've been talking about all this new imagery that we have because satellites are much cheaper now. We can put them up. There's imaging satellites that are in the hundreds in orbit. So we can get near real-time imagery from space. And that kind of stuff is really important when you're staging, you know, some sort of operation.
Okay. And when you say hundreds, do you mean like 100 million or 100,000? Like what does hundreds mean in that context?
No. So the best example of this is a company called Planet. And they have launched they're up to like almost 150 satellites right now in space. And those are about the size of your microwave. They're very small compared to traditional satellites. But they've been able to just put up hundreds of these things. Okay. So they can actually take an image of the entire Earth every single day.
Okay.
So wow. That's opened up some pretty cool, you know, outside of military uses. They've been talking about things like being able to look at parking lots from space and say, how is this company doing based on how many people are shopping there every single day? Because they have that kind of data frequency.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize that we were getting that number crunchy in satellite terms. When we talk about military, though, what would a space conflict look like? Would this be a situation where a few years ago I was reading about China, and I think this is one of the things Pence brought up, actually, that in 2007, China knocked out one of their old satellites. And at the time, they kind of like brushed it under the rug. But the American military went, hey, why are you developing anti-satellite technology? Presumably because they were going to knock out, if we were ever in a war with them, they would knock out, you know, our ability to get eyes on the ground and that kind of thing. So would the military element of this be just shooting down satellites, or is this sort of like new space race type stuff where, you know, somebody's firing up Sputnik and it has rockets on it that can shoot back down to Iowa? Or what's the what would a military conflict in space look like?
Yeah, the anti-satellite thing is very a good relevant news story, because India just tested theirs less than a month ago. So they did a similar test. Actually, very similar to the test that we did, or I call it a test, but the U.S. military calls it an operational mission in 2008, 1 year after that Chinese test. Okay. So there's been a couple of incidents in the last 10 years of these anti-satellite weapons. So that's definitely one of the things that you're worried about. And that gets back to what I was talking about, the Space Development Agency. They want to build this constellation of cheap satellites, because if somebody takes out one of your satellites, it's not that big of a deal.
Okay.
But if you've built a $3 billion spy satellite and somebody takes that down, that's a pretty big deal, because you can't really build those overnight. So denying the capabilities of space is certainly something to be concerned about. But the other thing is, you could just as easily launch a satellite that is able to scooch up next to one of the U.S. satellites way out at geostationary orbit and either grab it, move it so that it's no longer covering the area that you needed it to cover, or disable it, break the solar panels. You could do some pretty disastrous things in space if you really wanted to. So there's one of the things that the Air Force is currently working on, to their credit, is something that they call space situational awareness. That's a fancy acronym for satellites that watch other satellites.
Okay.
And this would be something that we launch to keep an eye on, and we can say, hey, that Russian satellite's getting pretty close to our communication satellite. Let's keep an eye on that, make sure they're not doing anything weird. So there's, you know, launched from the ground, but also launched from satellites or conducted by satellites. Those are all the kind of things that could really impact our capability.
Okay. And when we talk about a space force, I assume that at least in the short term, everybody in the space force would actually be here on Earth. It's just that their remit would be concerned with space. Like no one's talking about having like low orbital military apparatus that's, you know, staffed. We presumably would not have a DOD equivalent of the International Space Station or anything like that.
Exactly. I would not envision there being a Space Force member that has flown in space as a Space Force member on a governmental mission for, you know, one or two decades at this point. It's pretty far out. This is a lot more like office space plus cool uniforms than it would be anything else.
I'm okay with that. What about, okay, talk to me about the brain drain element, because this is something that I think is worth considering. I'm a big space enthusiast. I'm a fan of NASA. However, I think that the virility and the innovation in space is really coming out of the private sector right now. And so I would be concerned with creating a new branch specifically of government specifically dedicated to space, for fear that it would suck a lot of those brighter minds that might otherwise go work for Elon Musk and help me, you know, eventually achieve my dream of being in an orbital Hilton or alternately, you know, doing hydroponics on Mars or something like that. Is that a concern you have?
Not at all. Nearly all of the 15,000 personnel that would make up the Space Force right now already are in the military in some regard. And I think a more apt example of this would be NASA. Not to take this too far away from Space Force,
but I think it's a very relevant example.
Yeah, and NASA is having a horrible time retaining talent these days because there are so many opportunities. And people are jumping out of NASA and moving to LA and working for SpaceX, or moving to Seattle and working for Blue Origin. So there are that is happening to NASA today, and I think it's precisely because NASA isn't doing things that people are interested in. So if there were a Space Force that were working on very incredible technology that people would want to get into, they wouldn't have any hard time hiring up for that. So I think, you know, in this case, government agencies should take note of when they're having hard times filling those fields, because it shows that they're missing the point entirely. And that's precisely where the Space Forces are today within the U.S. Air Force. It's a very stifled environment that people don't tend to stay a long time in because it is very frustrating to work within today.
Okay, so then basically, by virtue of being a military and government appendage, the likelihood that it would be a permanent brain drain on people otherwise going into the private sector, you think would be of minimal probability? People would still be going to SpaceX?
Yeah, a lot of the friends that I have that are working at SpaceX today are going there because they see such grand things happening out of SpaceX. They are not, you know, tossing up between, should I go into the Air Force Space Command or should I go to SpaceX? That doesn't tend to be the thing that people are drawn to. But there are people that are very drawn to military service.
True.
And there are people that are very drawn to the missions of the military, or even somebody from one branch of the military that says, you know, I really like that space stuff. Maybe I'll see if they have a position that I could shift into. So it opens up avenues for sure, but I'm not worried about it as a brain drain type of influence.
Okay. As I understand it, this is not a really new idea resting with the Trump administration. I think the term Space Force might be, but this kind of policy recommendation of having either more autonomy for the military that handles space operations or alternately creating a new branch, that goes back at least a couple of presidencies, right?
Oh, absolutely. This has been around for an easy 20 years. This is something that has existed in the conversation for a long time. And if you remember back when I was talking about the three legs of what we're talking about as Space Force, mm-hmm. U.S. Space Command existed from 1985 until 2001. And after 9/11, there was a shift in our combatant commands, and we had to create U.S. Northern Command. So we took away U.S. Space Command and merged it with U.S. Strategic Command. So one leg of this has existed for almost 20 years on its own, back in the 80s, coming out of the Cold War. So none of this is new, and I think in that way, it gets hurt by its attachment to the Trump administration, the way that a lot of things do. People will, you know, shrug it off because it's attached to Trump. But when you realize that the people that are pushing this idea, the first person that mentioned Space Force to President Trump, probably is somebody that you would not even know the name of. He certainly latched onto it because it does sound like something he would be interested in. It does play to his base a little bit. It does play to the political message he wants to send.
Yeah.
But I don't really link those two things together.
Sure. Well, but on that note, though, like Mattis was against it, wasn't he? Now, granted, Defense Secretary Mattis left, I think, in January or December. I don't know the exact dates on that. But he I think, was more in my camp of being, concerned with the military sort of getting its house in order, getting rid of wasteful spending, better streamlining, that kind of thing. So he was pushing against it, as I recall.
Certainly, and almost the entire current military is. Certainly, Secretary Heather Wilson, the head of the Air Force, she was opposed to it up until the rumors started coming out in the media that President Trump had asked for her resignation. She is stepping down at the end of May and heading to the University of Texas, El Paso, to be president there.
Oh, wow.
So there are... Now, that one doesn't surprise me as much because you're saying to somebody, hey, we want
right.
to take,
we want to take away
$14 billion
power structure
of your budget.
And some of your money and some of your personnel. Yeah, they're,
precisely.
The head of any bureaucracy
is
going to be against that.
Yeah, $14 billion that is going off of her budget tomorrow if this goes through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Then how do you see this playing out then? Because this was announced back when the Republicans controlled the presidency and the House and the Senate. The Democrats have taken the House now. I would assume it's going to be a fairly difficult call to push that legislation through a Democrat-controlled House. Is this something that sits on the back burner until another presidential administration? Is this something you think Trump would manage to pull through?
It's interesting because in the first 2 years of the Trump presidency, the idea was Space Force as a separate entity. The current budget request submitted after the midterms, is Space Force within the Air Force. That is a much more amenable proposal, and that was actually a proposal that was working its way through Congress before President Trump was around, and that proposal was pushed by Republicans and Democrats alike. So the fact that they've shifted tactics after the midterms and all these hearings that I've mentioned I've been watching in the House and in the Senate, almost every one starts with the chairperson saying, this room is very split on this debate, and people have not made up their minds yet, which I find incredibly interesting as somebody who watches a lot of policy stuff. How often do you see somebody go into these hearings and legitimately say, I have not decided on this yet? It's really odd.
That I agree with you there. I used to work for the House, and every once in a while I watch C-SPAN, and I find that congressmen and congresswomen love having the opportunity to bloviate in front of a camera not for the benefit of their peers, but for the benefit of a newspaper recording it. That way they can get a soundbite in the local newspaper, and everybody goes, ah, Bill, he's giving them hell there in Washington. Bill's a great guy. I'm going to vote for him again. So I'm surprised that they would announce ambiguity in a situation that's televised. And
I think the interesting thing is, you know, you're pointing out that they're playing to their home audience, and that's what's happening in these hearings. People ask, you know, people that are from Northern Alabama will ask, is the Redstone Arsenal going to be part of Space Force? Mm. And it's not saying, will the Redstone Arsenal exist? And if yes, I support it. If no, I don't support it. That's just asking, what is this filed under? You know, so there's not, within each of these bases that people care about, whether it's an Air Force base, an Air Force station, an Army installation, within those places, there's not going to be a lot of change, right? It's in the Beltway area that this change is going to happen. But on the ground, there's not much change that you're going to notice tomorrow. And I think that's why a lot of people in Congress haven't yet decided how they're going to vote on this. But I do actually see some tides turning within these hearings, and people aren't as opposed to it as they've said in the media in the past. I don't know if that's because of the shift of tactic to make it its own thing versus under the Air Force. But I'm slightly hopeful, though I'm actually pretty disappointed, because if Space Force gets created under the Air Force, I don't know what that looks like to roll it out as its own thing. You know, are we going to get stuck in this rut forever? That's the part that concerns me.
Okay. Well, I'll conclude. You've allayed some of my fears. I am less skeptical of this than I was. However, were I a member of Congress or a senator, I would only vote for the creation of this branch if it came with no additional funding request. I don't see that happening. The military tends to have a lot of funding go to it. People like throwing money at it. The Republicans in particular tend to not, for whatever reason, the military is a sort of cognitive blind spot for deficit hawks, I find, where people that are very much opposed to spending, they're like, oh, but it has a tank involved? Okay, well, go ahead and give it, you know, an additional $15 billion. So if they put together a plan that was like, yep, it's going to be, you know, no further funding beyond the current levels, we're just reapportioning the structure to try and streamline things and have better advocacy for space issues, then I think I'd be okay with it. But we'll see how that pans out. Anthony, thank you very much for coming on the program. I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for briefing us on this.
Thank you so much, Andrew, and I'm excited to see meat bullets in space.
Me too. Tad bit of listener feedback before we cap off today's program. On iTunes, The Juicy says, Andrew Heaton's podcast is fun, light, and also informative. His take on politics are interesting, and his wit and humor make it an exceptional nightly podcast. Having said all of that, the real reason to listen to this podcast is to learn about new products and brands. Oh, great. That advertise on the show. The sugar-free edible suit I bought for my diabetic grandfather was by far a top gift at his birthday party, and I can't wait to use this new inextinguishable log I bought on the next camping trip with my girlfriend. Look out, California. Thank you very much, and I appreciate that. We vet our sponsors very, very carefully on this program, so thank you. You can watch this whole show on YouTube if you look for Something's Off with Andrew Heaton. You can then see my handsome bearded face and assortment of suits, edible or not, and the dead bison, edible or not, we screwed to the wall. Watching Something's Off with Andrew Heaton on your computer will only make you seem more sophisticated and amusing at your office or prison cell. So go to YouTube and start watching full episodes. I look like I'm about 5 minutes away from getting busted in the airport for muling coke in the 1970s. I didn't write that, but okay. Do I really look that way? I don't think I do. I perhaps look like a narc. I think I look like a narc. Or you know, as always, maybe a Scottish game show host. Anyway, remember, you can always tweet me at Mighty Heaton or Facebook me at facebook.com/Mighty Heaton, or even email me by subscribing to my newsletter at MightyHeaton.com and just replying when I send it out on Fridays. I let you guys down this last Friday, but I had work to do. Please forgive me. Finally, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. That helps other people discover this here political orphanage. Thank you, and good day.